Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
And our guest today is Sherry Pacey. She's the founder of the 900 Project, which is a local organization building latrines in a poor village in Haiti. And she joins us now with the latest mission coming up this month. Sherry, how are you today?
Hi, good morning.
So glad you are here.
Yes, all right. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's talk about latrines. They're basically outhouses. And without them, what are these people dealing with in Haiti? I mean, paint a picture of the problem that they're going through.
Yes, certainly. This is a huge issue in the village of Tillery, Haiti, and really across the board of the country. When we showed up back in 2012, my team was just taken back that there were actually no places for these 7,000 people to go to the bathroom. And when we looked around, we saw a lot of UNICEF tents and just different hospitals overcrowded with lines coming out the door. And we didn't understand what it was, and it was just a simple issue of not having a bathroom. And so there was a cholera outbreak at the time.
Wow. And Sherry, we understand that you started this group back in 2012. It was you and your husband. Well, so first of all, I mean, you kind of touched on it, but what, I guess, made you want to do this? Tony and I were kind of very briefly talking about, unfortunately, Haiti is among a few different countries that have a slew of different issues, things that we take for granted every day. But how did you kind of come across this need? Why did you decide, you know what, this is going to be my mission. This is what I'm going to focus on.
Yes, yeah, so back in 2012, I went with just a group of adults and mostly young teenagers, and we visited the village. We saw poverty. There's definitely a difference when you see poverty with your own eyes than just like seeing it on the television. And we got back in the van, and we all decided, and we felt just the power of the Holy Spirit come upon us, and we were like, we have to make a change. We need to do something. So what we actually did was, we turned the van around, and we're talking in this village, they don't have much of anything. They don't have drinking water. A lot of people don't have clothing. There's a lack of education, and just the needs are overwhelming. So we went back, and we just asked the local pastor, you know, our team wants to help you. What can we do to help you? So we were immediately thinking water, clothing, education, you know, big needs that we thought of. But he actually, that's where he gave us the idea of latrines. And not only did it help to eradicate cholera entirely, it gave people dignity, being able to go to the bathroom in a private area and not out in the open is just something that's priceless.
We're talking with Sherry Pacey. She's the founder of the 900 Project. That's a local organization. They're building latrines in a poor village in Haiti. Now, you have high schoolers going overseas with you this month to continue the work on the 900 Project, but we're also hearing you're going to the Dominican Republic. Now, what's going on over there?
So, yes, we work on both sides of the island of Hispaniola on the Dominican Republic side, and we do a lot of like relationship work down there. Black Rock Church, even before I started going on these trips, they built a church. They fundraised. It was actually the teenagers who built this church. So now when we go down, we really focus on relationships and just sharing the love of Christ with the people down there. We do bring some different needs of clothes. We bring backpacks. We bring baseball supplies. And we just go around and we love on the people in the streets. We love on the people at the baseball field and at the local church. And we've really just grown to become family with these people down there.
And what I think is amazing, we live in I don't think it's any secret, Fairfield County specifically happens to be one of the richest counties in the entire country. And I think the fact that you have high schoolers who are going to third world countries, are doing some of the work with their own hands, they are seeing it, and they are able to bring it back here. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways for me, especially as a parent. But I do have to ask you, Sherry, because I'm sure you've been doing this for long enough. Do you ever have parents who think, you know what, no, not my child, doesn't need to do this, someone else will do it, it's not safe,
or
whatever the case. So what do you say to those parents? I mean, what do you say for anyone who may out of the gate think, oh, this is very nice that you're doing this, but you know what, someone else will do it, my kid doesn't have to. What are these high schoolers getting out of it that, you know what, no, maybe you should think twice about sending your high schooler over?
Right. I definitely experience that all the time. And even with adults, you know, you come into the area where sometimes it's easier to give than to go. But the high schoolers that go, I mean, these kids are just changed forever. Like I said earlier, when you see the poverty with your own eyes and at a young age, I mean, I wish I saw this kind of poverty, because I would live my life totally different, spend my money different, use my time differently. And I just think it's really important to teach our teenagers and our own kids, you know, even my own kids, that it's important to give back, and even to other countries, and to just give of yourself and to just serve God with your whole heart.
You know, Sherry, I give you a lot of credit, because a lot of people talk the talk, but you're walking the walk. And it's very easy to say, hey, we got to do something for these people, and then go about your life. You're really taking the bull by the horns, and God bless you for that. That is amazing. Now, if people want to get their kids involved, how do they do it?
I would say we can always use the help, for sure. We love taking, you know, young teenagers or even adults on these trips. We have a Facebook page, The 900 Project, on Facebook, or our website, www.the900project.org. And just going through our contact information, you can look through our videos and pictures. But we're very open to taking new people and just showing them this experience that, you know, through Black Rock Church just opened the doors and really just showed us a broader image of the world and the hurting that's going on, not just here in America, but it's something that I believe everybody should see at least once in their lifetime.
Is there a website for folks that want more information on 900 Project?
Yes, for sure. It's just www.the900project.org.
All right, sounds good. Sherry Pacey, God bless you. Hey, really, good luck and be safe on this trip. And, well, maybe we'll talk to you on a little follow-up visit to find out how you did.
That'd be great to have
maybe one of your
high schoolers come on. That would be very cool if we could, when you come back. That would be neat.
We can absolutely make that happen.
All right. Sherry, thank you so very much. We turn your attention to a story that is trending all over the place this morning. It's out of West Haven. And, you know, even the first responders who have seen it all, they have seen it all. Even they were sick to their stomachs when they saw this. A miniature schnauzer was apparently lit on fire and killed over the weekend at Sandy Point Beach and Bird Sanctuary. The person who did this, they're saying, well, you know, if you wanted to get rid of the dog, there were other ways to get rid of the dog, you know, an unwanted pet, with all of your options. Why did you have to do this? No. This had nothing to do with getting rid of an unwanted animal. This is a sick, deranged, screwed up human being. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is somebody, they haven't found the person that has done this.
No.
But whoever has done this, they better find him quickly, because this is just a warm up as to what he is capable of doing. Now, all of these serial killers that you read about, all of them, okay, they always started on helpless animals. Okay. They always tortured and killed them. That's how it starts. Okay. And then it escalates into whatever it turns into.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever did this is a true criminal mind. This is somebody who gets his cookies doing this sort of thing. Now, he lit this dog on fire. I can bet you everything that I have, from a distance, he watched this pet suffer, and he was watching it and really getting off on all of this. This, to me, makes me sick. I am an animal lover. I just feel that these animals are, all of them, they're little babies that never grow up, especially a dog or a cat that has been domesticated. You have to watch out for them at all times. And to do this is just a sickening thing. And when I read this morning, I really thought that I was going to throw up. I really did. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And the fire was extinguished. They found the small dog, possibly a one-year-old mini schnauzer with cropped ears and a cropped tail. And, well, they don't know who was at the source of this fire, but hopefully they will find out who this is. And when you do, douse him with gasoline, and I would be very happy to light the match.
Right, I'm sure. Well, and what's interesting about this, Tony, is near the end of the report, it says that they are looking for possibly the owner to come forward, but not because they think the owner did it. So I think that that's kind of interesting. Like you said, if you watch, you know, the only thing that comes to my mind when you say things like serial killers is, of course, the documentary that's been all over the place lately, which is Ted Bundy. And when you watch that on Netflix, there's a part in it where it talks about how Ted Bundy would go over to neighbors' houses, or he would see skunks in the yard, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And that's who his first victims mm-hmm. were when he was a kid. So this dog very well could have either gotten out, could have been taken. This doesn't mean necessarily that the owner of this dog is the culprit. In fact, the dog could have been, like I said, could have been snatched. This is a one-year-old dog that they're assuming is a baby, a real, real baby pup. And it may not have been the person who owns the dog. Now, they didn't say anything about tags or anything like that. So, of course, you know, immediately I think you always go to it has to be the person who owned it. But it may not be. It may be a crazy neighbor. Or it could be somebody who has been watching. Who knows? Or if the dog got out. I don't know. No matter who it is, though, it just makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. It's disgusting.
Well, administrators of the West Haven Why Not Facebook page have offered a $1,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of whoever was responsible mm-hmm. for this heinous act. It's just nothing more has to be said about it. I mean, it's just absolutely reprehensible. It really, really is. And, mm-hmm. and whoever did this, ice water runs through their veins. I mean, there's no redeeming quality whatsoever. None whatsoever. Yes,
it's pretty sick.
You know, my heart breaks when I've stepped on the cat and he made a
sure.
noise and, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Right.
You know, and it's like to pull something like this, you've got to be kidding me.
That's how I feel, to be honest. I mean, I'm certainly, I'm a huge animal activist, and I think I sometimes maybe go further than what people would expect, but that's why when I see if people hit, you know, when I see dead animals on the side of the road or something and they haven't been removed or they've been sitting there, it infuriates me just because I understand, you know, accidents happen. I've hit animals before. I'm not perfect by any means, but call, like, say something. I don't know. It's these animals have no say. They have nothing to back them up. They have nobody to help them or to save them. And it infuriates me that you would prey on something that is so vulnerable. And like you said, Tony, they, you know, we don't deserve
nope.
these domesticated animals. I mean, when you think about it, they love us unconditionally. They are so wonderful to us. And even if you're not a dog lover, even if you're not a cat lover or whatever, God, leave them alone. I mean, my gosh, like they said, this had nothing to do with, hey, I can't take care of my animal anymore. Let me, you know, go let it be free. You know, it sounds horrible. But a couple months ago when we had the Mohegan Sun, Lake Mohegan, excuse me, when we had Fairfield police come on and they talked about the dogs being abandoned at Lake Mohegan,
yeah.
You'd almost prefer that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sounds awful, but every time you hear about something that's worse, you think, okay, you know what? I'd rather have the dogs be abandoned. At least they'll be found. Somebody will love them. Then light it on fire. There's just no way that somebody thought, I just don't know what to do with my dog. Let me torture it.
Well,
it's disgusting.
At least when they're abandoned, they have a fighting chance.
Exactly.
Reading here this morning, 50% of online voters say they know how to drive a stick shift. Do you know how to drive a stick shift?
I knew you were going to ask.
I have no idea how to drive a stick shift.
So my mom has offered so many uh-huh. times. My husband knows how to.
Yes.
I would love to learn, but I do not know.
Your mother knows how to drive one.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the way that it was.
Yeah.
When you were
She's
learning
very
to drive.
Good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, my wife knows how to drive a stick shift.
Yeah, so does my husband. He's huge into it. He loves it.
Her sisters know how to drive a stick shift.
Mm-hmm.
But she came from a time, she lost her mom when she was 5 years old. And
this is your wife?
This is my wife.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't
know
that.
And she was raised basically by her dad.
Sure.
And by her grandparents, spent a lot of time with her grandparents. But her dad was the one that taught her how to drive.
Sure.
And he was adamant, no, you are going to learn on a stick shift.
Mm-hmm.
And she learned. She learned how to do it.
That's so cool.
You know, I don't know if she... She would probably need a refresher course now, I would think, because it's been
years. I've heard it's like riding a bike. My mm-hmm. husband was taught because he was raised by his grandfather, same kind of thing. It's mm-hmm. like if you're going to learn how to drive a car, you're going to learn stick shift. And my mom didn't, I don't think my mom had, you know, used stick shift all throughout our childhood. But then my dad had got her a new car when she turned 50, and you're able to do stick shift with it. And she hadn't done it for 30 years, but she picked it up right away.
Yeah, it's well, in those days, like I know my grandfather, that's all he had was the stick shift. Both of my grandfathers, that's all they had. My father, you know, in my early days, early childhood, that's what he drove.
Yeah.
You know, he had a Rambler, if anybody remembers
those.
That's
cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and sure. that was the whole thing, you know. But nowadays, that kind of goes out the window. I mean, I wouldn't even know where to begin with all of that, you know.
Do you have any, like, interest? Do you have interest in learning how to do it? Because I'd love to learn. I can't find 2 seconds to, hey, let me go take a driving course, or let me go in the back parking lot of the church and, you know, flip some, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I used to really want to when I was, you know, in high school and college, but now I just am like, oh, you're very impressive.
Well, I remember I used to envy people that would drive a stick shift. I was like, wow, that's really cool. I wish I could do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The couple of times that I tried it, I grind the gears, and you can smell the gears grinding in. It was just, it wasn't a pretty thing, you know. And I just kind of like threw up my hands, and that was the end of that. But that's kind of a dying
art. So how many people say that they can?
About 50%, which I thought was a very high number.
I think that's very impressive.
In this day and age.
Yeah.
You know?
Because I think about all my siblings, I think I might even be pushing it. I believe my older brother knows how to, only because he took an interest in learning from my mom.
Mm.
But the rest of us don't know how to. The other four kids don't. So that's only 20% of Czechs that know how to do it. So
well,
there you go. I'm shocked that it would be 50%. I don't know. That's what I go by.
Well, there you go. So if you don't know how to drive a stick shift, you are not alone. Also, as I look at these pages of surveys, 15% of online voters say their favorite pizza topping is mushrooms. I'm with that. I'm down.
I do like mushrooms on a pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not a mushroom fan, there's something nice about the combination of it. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, no.
But
always.
That's the favorite, though. I would have thought like a bacon or pepperoni or something like that.
That's what they say. 15% of them. They say that the favorite pizza topping is mushroom. But I got to be honest with you. You know, bacon, that's fine. Pepperoni, that's fine. There's a place that just opened across the street from us. I mean, directly across the street.
Oh,
called
a
Slice of Stanford is what it's called. And they just opened up maybe 2 months ago. And we've tried it several times. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really is. I mean, we really enjoy it. But he's got all of these different pizzas. There's got to be 20 of them that he has lined up in a row. It's like in a showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And people come in and they're like, oh, give me 2 slices of that one. And they warm it up and everything like that. And he's got everything. You name it, it's there. I asked him one day, I said, can you put together a pizza of all of these different kinds?
Yeah.
Just put them all together. And he was like, nobody's ever asked me that before. I says, I guess we could, you know. He says, I don't know if it would fit in the box because these pieces
are huge.
They're huge, you know. And he says, I don't know. I don't know if it would fit in the box. I said, well, how about if I came here and just ate it, sat here in the restaurant? He goes, Tony, if you come here and that's what you want, I'll do it for you, you know?
That is funny.
Yeah, but it's got all of them, you know, the vegetable topping.
I prefer veggies. I don't know why. Yeah. I'm very weird about meats on a pizza. I just figured that, I mean, pepperoni's fine,
mm-hmm.
but I've always been, even since I was a kid, I was always a veggie pizza kind of girl.
Yeah,
I just love me a bunch of broccoli, you know, throw some broccoli, some spinach, some, you know, even if you put some cheese on it, I don't know. I think the veggies are the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we said it before, there's no such thing as a bad pizza. I just don't like fruit on my pizza.
I never, the ham and the Hawaiian pizza or whatever.
I
don't like ham, but I don't like ham and pineapple on my pizza. It just seems weird.
Yeah, it is a little weird, but hey, you know, people
like it though. We're the weird ones.
There you go.
It's time to take a look back. It's Today in History with Tony and Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
All right, some interesting things that happened on this date in history. 224 years ago today, 1795, James Swan personally paid off the entire national debt of $2,024,899 that the U.S. owed to France. It was the one and only time that we were actually caught up as far as our finances go.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that was very, very amazing. And that was at a time when $2 million was $2 million.
That's a lot.
There you go. 61 years ago today, 1958, a Catholic magazine called Contacts launched a campaign for clean lyrics in pop music. Now, one of the songs they wanted changed was Elvis's Wear Your Ring Around My Neck because it promoted going steady.
Hey!
raunchy lyrics there, baby. Very suggestive. Oh, my gosh. All right. 24 years ago today, 1995, the Grateful Dead played their last show with Jerry Garcia. He died of a heart attack about a month later, and that was kind of the end of an era. 22 years ago, 1997, Mike Tyson was banned from the boxing ring and fined $3 million for biting Evander Holyfield's ear.
Ugh, yeah. I remember that. It was awful.
All right. And also in 2002, George W. Bush awarded Nelson Mandela the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Mm-hmm. And 8 years ago today, 2011, I remember it like it was yesterday, Derek Jeter became the 28th player in Major League Baseball history to join the 3,000 hit club. Since then, Alex Rodriguez, Ichiro Suzuki, Adrian Beltre, and Albert Pujols have also joined the club. You think Derek Jeter is a Hall of Famer?
I think Derek Jeter is the best thing since sliced bread.
Well, I'm telling you right now, he'll get in on his very first. He's not going to be unanimous like Mariano.
No, I don't think anybody will ever be like Mo. I mean, Mo, I think, was just something special. I don't think we'll ever see. Maybe, I mean, who knows what'll come down the rankings. But I will say really quickly, going back, not to that history, but the one before that, did I ever tell you I sat in Nelson Mandela's cell in South Africa?
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went over to Robben Island and I sat in his cell. When I was living in South Africa, we happened to have gone on a tour, and one of the famous rugby players in South Africa, they have the Springboks is the name of their team. One of the players was there and he had his kids with them. And he said, "Do you guys want to join our tour? We're going to go sit in Mandela's cell."
Now, what is that, like a tourist attraction now?
It's. I mean, you can go to visit the island where he was imprisoned and everything, but you can't sit in his cell. That's very rare to do that.
I didn't know you lived in South Africa.
For 6 months.
Wow, I went to South Norwalk once.
And now, Random Knowledge with Tony and Melissa on WICC 600.
Some things that you might not have known, and that's what we're here for, is to bring you up to date on everything. You know, it's been over 20,300 days since JFK was shot, which is the longest the U.S. has ever gone without a president dying in office. The old streak was 18,966 days from George Washington to William Henry Harrison, for those of you who are keeping score this morning.
I was going to say, oh, I don't know if that's something I want to keep score of, but hey, that's still interesting. There you go. Let's see. No former Saturday Night Live cast member has ever won an Oscar for acting, but one former In Living Color cast member has, and that was Jamie Foxx, who won Best Actor for Ray. I'm surprised by that with Saturday Night Live. The talent that comes out of there, I would think, I don't know.
Yeah, but did they ever do anything memorable? You know what I mean? Did they ever do anything that's like Academy Award worthy? I mean, like the Coneheads? Things like that. I don't know. I know Eddie Murphy was nominated for Dreamgirls about 10 or 15 years ago, yeah. But that was the only other time. I thought that Jamie Foxx was just unbelievable as Ray Charles.
I thought so too. Yeah.
He really was awesome. Charlize Theron's alcoholic father shot her and her mother when she was a kid.
Really?
Yeah, her mother then got a gun of her own, shot back, and killed him. It was found to be self-defense, and she wasn't charged. But, yeah, these are things that you don't want to dredge up in your family history.
No, seriously. Charlize, too. I love her. She's great.
Yes, she really is. And you know something? She must have a deal or something with Netflix, because her name pops up as an executive producer on a lot of those movies. Even though that movie, Murder Mystery with Adam Sandler, even though it was horrible, she was an executive producer on that movie.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, she was an executive producer on, I believe, that movie with Woody Harrelson and Kevin Costner.
When they do... you and I are just awful right now. I can't think of what that's called. The Outlaw Men or something.
The story of Bonnie and Clyde.
Clyde, there you go. That's interesting. So she's an executive producer. Isn't everyone becoming an executive producer now?
Well, that's the way to make
money. I feel like everyone is. Yeah, that's true.
There you go. That's. I mean, after all, I'm executive producing this show, am I not?
You are.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm just over there, I'm just sidestepping. It's all good.
All right, Bill. What about those Tuesday trivia tidbits?
All right, the first novel ever written on a typewriter. You know what that was?
It wasn't the Bible, was it?
I don't think that's a novel. Is it a novel? First novel ever written on a typewriter was Tom Sawyer.
Oh, all right. All right. Yeah, by Samuel Clemens. Yes, of course. Yes, know him well. Sure.
And later on by Mark Twain.
Yes.
Now, because metal was scarce back in World War II, the Oscars were given out during World War II. They were made of plaster.
Yeah, I knew that. Yes. Yes.
That's crazy. Yeah. Huh? So you have one of those. It's like, oh, only once was that happening.
Yeah. It's you know, the Oscar, you know, you would think, and it is, it's a great, great honor. And some people, they take it, you know, very seriously, and they put it in a case and everything like that. Clark Gable won his Oscar, I think, in 1934 for a film called It Happened One Night. He wins the Oscar, and it didn't really mean anything to him. He was one of these guys that really didn't have an ego. All he cared about was, you know, fishing and hunting and all of that. So he takes the Oscar, he brings it home. For years, he used it as a doorstop, you know, to keep his back door opened. He would use it as a doorstop. And there was a little kid that lived next door to him. Okay, and he would come over every now and again. He would play with Clark Gable's dog and everything. And he admired the Oscar. He says, wow, that's really cool. He said, can I have it? And Clark Gable said, you want it? He says, yeah. He goes, go ahead, take it. And the kid took it home, and that was the end of that.
Wow.
Interesting story, don't you think, for those of you who collect such useless information?
And there then later go. On, the kid's like, guess what I have?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Academy frowns on that. You're really not supposed to do that. If you're thinking of getting rid of your Oscar or selling your Oscar or whatever it is, you've got to sell it back to the Academy. They decide what
really?
You can do. Oh, yeah. They don't like that.
So you don't really own it. It's not just really yours.
Well, you own it, but they frown on that. They really don't want you to just give it away or sell it or auction it off or whatever the case is. There's a whole rigmarole behind all of that. My God, how does he know these things?
Clark is like saying, you know what? Just take this stupid thing. I don't need that thing. It's in my way. It keeps my door open.